yesterday. Holding Bobby's body next to mine.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 5 o'clock. This is Simon English. Kris Kristofferson, the American singer, songwriter and actor, has died at the age of 88. After studying at Oxford, he gave up a career in the US Army to pursue his music. Among his early successes was Me and Bobby McGee in 1969.
Feeling good was good enough for me.
It became a huge hit the following year when Janis Joplin re-recorded it. Kristofferson also appeared in several films such as Convoy, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, and A Star is Born with Barbara Streisand. A statement said he passed away peacefully in Hawaii, surrounded by his family. At least 91 people are now known to have died across several American states after high winds and torrential rain caused by Storm Helene. One official in Asheville in North Carolina, around 200 miles inland, described the damage as biblical devastation. The UK will pass an historic landmark today when the country's last coal-fired power station closes at midnight. Ratcliffe-on-Soar in Nottinghamshire has been generating power for the last 56 years. When operations end, the UK will become the first major economy to quit coal. Here's our climate editor, Justin Rowlett.
The UK pioneered the use of coal to generate electricity for public use when the US inventor Thomas Edison opened the world's first plant in Holborn in London in 1882. The phase-out of coal, the most polluting fossil fuel, has been made possible by the rapid rollout of renewable power, particularly offshore wind, backed up by gas and nuclear generation. The government has promised to get that gas off the grid too and make the UK's electricity zero carbon by 2030. It will mean more pylons, more solar farms and more wind turbines.
Israel has expanded its military operation in Lebanon, striking dozens of Hezbollah sites and reportedly targeting another group. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine said three of its leaders had been killed in an Israeli airstrike in Beirut's Kola district. A SpaceX rocket with two crew aboard has successfully docked on the International Space Station. There are two spare seats on the Dragon vessel, which will be needed to bring back two astronauts who have been stranded there since June. Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams were supposed to spend 8 days there, but had to prolong their stay because of a technical problem. The plan is to bring them back home in February. For NASA astronaut Nick Hague, who's been twice before to the ISS, it was an emotional return.
Coming through the hatch and seeing all the smiles, and as much as I've laughed and cried in the last 10 minutes, I know it's going to be an amazing expedition, so I'm really looking forward to getting to work up here.
A quick look at the weather. Windy and unsettled in the south of the UK as rain continues for much of England and Wales. And that's the BBC News. It's just coming up to 3 minutes past five.
If you love your pop, this is right up your street.
Pop Top 10 with Scott and Rylan.
We've picked some of the most hotly contested questions of all time and decided to settle them once and for all with the help of some special guests. We're taking it very seriously.
I can't let things like that slide on this show.
Now, come on!
What are you on about?
Don't put words into my mouth.
I won't, darling. You're spatting them yourself.
Search Pop Top 10 to listen on BBC Sounds.
Wake Up to Money from BBC Five Live.
Hello, welcome to Wake Up to Money. It is exactly 1 month until the budget. Rumours abound over what it could mean for households, for businesses. We're going to have a look at what rules could be changed and why there are a rush of deals being done amongst big companies ahead of it. And we'll also hear what individuals are hoping for, including some of those in Rachel Reeves' constituency who are finding it hard.
I do get a decent-ish wage, but I still can't manage on that wage.
And as new figures on job vacancies suggest the ball is back in the employer's court, we ask you for your experiences of looking for work.
Wake Up to Money with Sean Farrington.
Good morning to you. A very good welcome, very big welcome to Wake Up to Money on Monday, the 30th of September.
Yes, 30th of October is the big date on the horizon, but let's get today out of the day, September out of the way first, shall we? Just after 5 o'clock, I'm Sean Farrington. Thank you so much for being with me this morning. I feel like we've been steadily building up our conversation of what the budget will hold and hearing from so many of you about what you're looking out for, what you think should happen. So many people coming on this show and laying out the consequences of some major changes that could happen in the tax world, where they think spending should happen, investment, that thing that needs building down the road from you in your area. Will it get built? Will there be a plan for it? What will the plan be for infrastructure across the UK? All of this is up for grabs when Rachel Reeves starts talking on October the 30th, and there's going to be a lot of chat to occur between now and then, and the government will be listening, won't they? They'll be trying to get it right while also trying to carry out the policies that they told us that they would be doing. We've heard a lot from Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves about how tough decisions need to be made. But what is really going on and what are going to be the consequences of some of these decisions? 85058, we'll get into that a little bit more this morning, with a particular consequence of capital gains tax, something many of you do get in touch with us about, particularly, you know, if you own properties or running a business, there may be consequences for you from there. Or maybe you're, you know, in the supply chain of all those businesses making those decisions, those lawyers, those the deal brokers who are looking to take advantage, cash in when businesses want to make big moves in that world, and there may be capital gains tax involved. Are you starting to see people act as if there are going to be big changes on the way? Do let me know. 85058 is the number this morning. Damini Sharma joins me, Chief Executive at the OM Group in Coventry, training professional services provider for the construction industry. She's Vice Chair of the Institute of Directors British Asian Business Group as well. Damini, very good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Sean. How are you?
I am all right, thank you. Thanks for joining us again, Damini. Are there changes afoot in your industry because of potential big government policies that may be on the horizon?
Oh, goodness, yes. There's a lot of changes afoot in our industry. I mean, there's changes afoot as a result of all the regulatory change that we've had. The recent release of the Grenfell Tower Inquiry report, you know, big things that we've seen happen recently with even the collapse of ISG. There's so many changes afoot, and the budget just seems to be another one that we have to contend with.
And is there anything in particular in the budget that you're thinking that this is the moment of the speech, or even if it doesn't pop up in the speech, I need to look at the small print of the actual, you know, the readout, the detail, the balance sheet that they put out afterwards that actually lays out every single policy, even if they're not talked about in the speech? Is there something that you're thinking, right, that could affect me more than those other decisions?
Well, capital gains tax, that's one that I'm going to be watching out for and seeing what, you know, which way that goes and what they actually do with it. I feel that generally, though, because it's the first budget of the new government, we're a little bit, as a business owner, I'm a little bit nervy about what's going to be in the budget and how it could impact business owners. And I just feel that there's not enough focus by the current government on how, what they can do to help small business owners and entrepreneurs, and how they can encourage them to grow and scale their businesses, and therefore, in return, naturally, to help boost the economy.
Got Jane Foley with me as well this morning, Head of FX Strategy at Rabobank. Jane, very good morning to you. You follow the numbers. You follow the, we talk to you often about currency moves, where the pound is, you know, how the rest of the world may be viewing the UK economy. And these kind of budgets, particularly when big decisions are expected to be made, can move those currencies, can change people's perceptions, can't they?
Indeed. I mean, sterling is the best performing G10 currency in the year to date. And part of that was about enthusiasm about the new government, the expectation that more political stability in the UK could really get investors going. UK investment growth has been really quite poor, you know, for a number of years. And it did appear that this government does understand the need to boost investment, which would boost productivity, which would boost growth, and they have very lofty growth targets. And so this is the real risk here. At one hand, the government appears to understand the need to boost investment, but on the other hand, the public finances aren't very good. So it's a very difficult, very narrow path, I think, that Rachel Reeves has got to walk. How is she going to manage this very difficult fiscal situation without putting investors off? And it's going to be very interesting to see how she manages that, if she manages that.
Can you lay out how you see the fiscal situation? That when we use the word fiscal, it's sort of, what is it, what the government sees as the state of the UK finances and the decisions it makes around that? Is that what that £22 billion black hole phrase is referring to?
Yeah, it's related to anything to do with tax and spending, basically. And I think the big headline for us all to worry about is that the fact that UK debt as a percentage of GDP is about 100%. Now, going into the financial crisis, it was about 50%. And that's a mark of how bad this is. And we all remember, 2 years ago, what happened when we had Liz Truss and she wanted to come in and spend more money. And the gilt market, which is the UK debt market, basically said, well no. And of course, gilts are generally owned by pension funds. So they're the biggest owner. And the owners of the debt said, no, if you're not going to live within your means, we're not going to carry on buying your debt. And we know what happened. The value of the gilts went down. Sterling went through the floor, etc. So we know that there is a discipline implied by the market onto the government. The government is very well aware of this. And Rachel Reeves knows she just can't just open up the wallet book, because it would have very bad repercussions for the UK economy.
Right. And what does this, as we have heard aplenty almost in every single interview with Keir Starmer, Rachel Reeves, and we will continue to, no but doubt, this £22 billion black hole that Rachel Reeves talks about, and that will be... she's attempting to deal with in the budget, she says. What is it?
Well, that is something that she said she discovered when she took over her job from the previous chancellor. She said it was something that wasn't there before. So she said it's a shock that the government now have to work out what they can spend and what they can't spend based on different numbers to the one that they had expected before the election. But of course, there's a lot of politicking in this as well. And we've got to remember that some of this was because the new Labour government did agree, for instance, with the doctors, a higher pay increase. Now, she said that that's all part of this bigger holistic outlook for the UK economy, that there are lots of people, for instance, on disability, lots of people out of work in their 50s. And she said, we need to keep the doctors in the UK. We need to keep the doctors that we're training in order to get the people in their 50s, etc., back into the workforce in order to boost growth. So that's why she did that. But there are some quarters worrying that other unions will start demanding more money, given that some have been successful, and this could be another problem for the government.
Dominique, when you said before, you had that nervousness around the budget, as it's the first one of a new government, where does that nervousness really stem from?
Just the understanding of what they're going to do for small business owners. The government have talked about this roadmap for tax for small businesses and for businesses that they plan on releasing. And it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. It's also about how, as businesses, we can understand what we need to do to plan for the future. It's having that stability. We've been through so much, COVID, Brexit, the different wars, the various challenges that we've had recently. And I think as business owners, we've proved ourselves to be very resilient. Me in particular felt that, we've had to be very, very resilient in our business. And the construction industry has been hit hardest with a lot of the challenges that have come about in the recent years. So I think it will be important for us to really understand what the government has planned for business, so that we can truly start to get some of that confidence back.
We have been out and about in Rachel Reeves' constituency in the West Yorkshire town of Pudsey, asking people what they'd like to see from that budget in exactly a month's time. Here's an NHS worker, single mum Chantal, who says she's desperately worried that her costs are going to rise.
I do get a decent-ish wage, but I still can't manage on that wage, so I have to get help from Universal Credit for top-up. Sorry. I have to get help for Universal Credit on top-up. I have to get the single person's discount because I can't manage to look after my three kids on my own. I already get help with my shopping from family members and stuff because I can't afford to do that myself. Sorry. So I just don't think she's doing a very good job at the minute.
Chantal, thank you for talking to us. I mean, Dominique, just hearing Chantal there, it shows, you know, the real consequences for so many households of the kinds of decisions that could be on the way for this budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's that is the thing that really frustrates me about how policies are thought about and then released and everything else. I mean, we've heard so much about this winter fuel payment, and I know that's, you know, that's a reason that that's been done, but it's real individuals, it's the people that actually get impacted by what the government does. And this is one of the things that really, really frustrates me about government policies. There needs to be some level of stability. We can't have policies that change with every five-year political cycle. We need to have some stability so that people can start to plan for their future and they know that from one government to the next are not going to be impacted. That's heartbreaking to hear the emotion in her voice.
Here's Amanda Truman, who owns Truman's Books in Pudsey. And she says there's one big concern for small businesses like hers that she wants the Chancellor to tackle.
One of the main issues that I would like to see addressed in the budget is business rates. I think the business rate system is long overdue for reform. It's quite an antiquated system. It's quite an opaque system. I had to pay someone to help me navigate it because it's really quite complicated. I think it disadvantages bricks and mortar shops, little independent high street businesses who are trying to compete against big online giants, and we pay the business rates and they don't. And also, we don't have a lot of security over what the rates are going to be moving forward. We get relief, business rates relief. We get hospitality, retail and hospitality relief. We get small business relief, and that's really important for us. It's a significant discount from the rate. But all we know is that we get it this year. We don't know what it's going to be like next year, the year after. If those reliefs disappear, then that could seriously jeopardise the business. So when I'm looking at whether to expand or whether to hire another member of staff, it's tough for me to take that jump when I don't have confidence of what my outgoings are going to be in the future years. So some kind of clarity would be really useful.
And the budget, the axe has got to swing somewhere. So if you were in charge and you were making those decisions, where does it go?
Well, I probably wouldn't take it from the pensioners. I would probably be looking at the people who have the broadest shoulders, the high earners, the big online retailers who do all kinds of clever things so they don't pay their way in ways that our small businesses, you know, can't. So I would be looking to them.
Dominey, interesting. Amanda Truman running a bookshop there. You're in the construction business, but a fair bit of overlap in your questions and concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's 100% right there. Business rates is a very opaque system. It's a very outdated system. And I do think it unfairly penalises particularly retail and hospitality and retail in comparison to online retail. And I think that we do need a little bit more, a lot more stability in business rates. We need to understand it more. It's, even though we're in construction, my actual industry is construction and the built environment. So I do work with a lot of clients on when they purchase properties and having to go through the delisting process to actually be able to function and make those properties into something else when they've bought properties that are derelict. And I think that business rates is a very, very outdated system that could be done in a better way. Right now, it's really about raising revenue for local government. That's what business rates are for. And I just think that there's got to be a better way than that.
Jane, with all this juggling that's going to be going on and it tees us up for the month ahead, what exactly do investors around the world who are looking to you know, buy the debt, as you put it, or sort of effectively lend the UK government money, and that affects the interest rate the UK is charged, and that has a ripple effect on the mortgages that people might get, all of this kind of stuff that we saw in the fallout of that Liz Truss budget. But what do all of those investors want? If you say there's a, that they don't want what Liz Truss did, there's a fine line, but they're getting a bit more excited about a new government with a bit of stability. Is it, can the Chancellor win?
It's going to be difficult because the debt is so high. But there are things that, you know, she can do to win. And I think, you know, just stability on its own is helpful. There's also news in the press right now, for instance, that Rachel Reeves might be attending one of the finance minister meetings of the EU, maybe in December. The idea that there may be a more stable, smoother relationship with Europe is quite helpful, because that was one of the reasons that business investment was on the back foot in the last few years. The uncertainty about the relationship with Europe, for instance, the additional costs at, and paperwork at, you know, imports, exports, for instance, with Europe. So these issues are very politicised, but they're not costly in terms of fiscal measures. So there are a variety of other measures that the government can do. And another one, which we may hear more about in the budget, are the issues related to, for instance, planning permissions. These sorts of policies that don't cost more in terms of spending, but can actually help some types of investors.
Front page of the Daily Mirror today, emergency money exclusive. It says NHS budget boost. Rachel Reeves will plough any spare cash into the NHS, as the Mirror puts it, to repair the damage 14 years of Tory cuts has inflicted on it. They've got a Treasury insider there saying, we know that cutting NHS waiting lists is a priority for people. That's just one of the many, many decisions that could well be on the way in the budget in a month's time. 85058, let us know what is really top of the agenda for you. When you're hearing all of this, what do you make of it? Is there something you want us to be looking at in the days and weeks ahead? We will get right on it for you. Plenty in the papers to go through as well. Let's get the weather forecast for the day first, though, shall we? Here is Elizabeth Rutini at the BBC Weather Centre.
Hello there, good morning. Well, it's been a very wet month across the southern half of the UK, and some spots have seen more than three or four times their average September rainfall, and there's still more rain to come today, of course, for many of us too. There's a deep area of low pressure continuing to roll northwards and eastwards. There's been a lot of rain through the night across southwest England, Wales, central southern England, and that rain continues to push further northwards and eastwards as we head through today. Some of the heaviest downpours of rain as we head through the morning into the afternoon could be across northwest England through Cheshire, the Liverpool Bay area, and also into southeast Yorkshire, Lincolnshire, into parts of northern Norfolk and the North Midlands, where the ground is already saturated, of course. Towards southern England, still some gusty winds for Channel Coast, but it's turning drier here. And across Northern Ireland and for much of Scotland, the chance for a few showers, but some dry weather, plenty of cloud. Highs today of around 14 to 17 Celsius for most, but 10 to 13 degrees in the north and underneath the rain. Elizabeth Rizzini, Five Live Weather.
Good morning to you. It's Wake Up to Money on BBC Five Live. Got Diamond Sharma with me, who's the chief exec of the construction industry training and professional services company OM Group in Coventry. Diamond, making a few headlines this morning as the Conservative Party conference, you know, sort of got underway. There is obviously a leadership battle going on there as well. Lots of interviews being done by the various candidates, but there's been one particular point that is literally the front page splash in the Daily Telegraph, makes the front page of the Times this morning, gets a little bit on the front page of the Sun as well. Kemi in row on mum pays, the Sun, the Times, Tory rivals trade barbs over the quote excessive burden of maternity pay, and then the Telegraph's main headline, Badenoch sparks Tory splits over maternity pay costs. Now, when you look at what Kemi Badenoch, one of the people running to be leader of the Conservative Party, was saying in an interview she did where she says families needed to take more personal responsibility over finances when they have children. So personal responsibility, the words being quoted there in the Times, and other candidates saying didn't quite agree with her on this one. What do you make of that? That all of a sudden becoming a hot topic, the potential burden for businesses of maternity pay.
Oh, honestly, Sean, it's just ridiculous how little they know what's important out there at the moment. And I think this is the case across our whole political spectrum. This is a very, very good example of politicians and those that we look to lead the country, whether it's now the opposition party or it's our current government, actually focusing on a matter that is such a small part of what we as business owners have to focus on. And this is where we need them to take a step back and say, hang on a second. Yes, this is important. Yes, we've got to deal with this. Yes, maternity pay has its place, and it's not a function that we should be even thinking about removing right now under this current economic climate. But what we need to do is focus on the bigger picture here, and we need to focus on what actually delivers for people across the UK, whether they're business owners, whether they're individuals, whether they're, you know, people who are working, members of a union, not members of a union, the wealthy, the not wealthy. And we need to find a route forward that actually allows the country to become that real super powerhouse that it should always have remained as and should always continue to strive to be. And it's just frustrating for me that this is such a small issue becomes such a big news story.
I mean, the issue itself, because, you know, over the course of the day yesterday, just as if you're following the news headlines, you get that insight into what's going on, into the Conservative Party leadership battle at the moment, as maybe the headlines are pretty big, or the leaders maybe try and make it a little bit bigger so that, because they realise it might, you know, potentially might not have been quite what Kemi Badenoch was trying to get across. Later in the day, she came out and said, of course, maternity pay isn't excessive. No mother of three kids would think that, but we must talk about the burden of excessive business regulation. The way that came about, do you sort of get what she was on about?
I understand what she's talking about, and I understand the what she meant by it, because it is on businesses to make sure that takes place, and that people are paid maternity pay. But I just think they're just focusing on the small minutiae and the little details that we don't need our government to focus on, or the opposition party to focus on. What we need right now from the Conservative Party is, let's select a leader that's going to stabilise the party. Let's have some policies that actually will deliver for business. And if we're going to be a strong opposition party, this is from their perspective, not me. I'm not a party member of either party. But if they're going to be a strong opposition party, they need to be in a position to actually, one, support the Labour policies that actually they agree with, and two, provide some checks and balances for the things that they don't believe that the government are doing that they should be doing. And I think anything other than that, any of this, you know, hype around all of these different policies and these little minute details is just detracting from what we actually need to focus on as a country, which is economic growth, the happiness index, making sure that people are looked after, and that we actually as a country look attractive to other people. I feel like there's more people that are leaving this country than want to come and actually live here.
85058, do you agree with Harmony? Do you agree with Kemi Badenoch's points this morning? Anybody who is making a point, do let us know yours. If you want to get in touch with us, please do. We've had a few messages coming in. We'll go through a few of those in a moment. Let's cross to Singapore and check in with our correspondent there, Katie Silver. Morning to you, Katie.
Good morning, Sean.
We've had a bit of an update on how China is getting on, the state of its economy. Where is it sitting this morning?
It's not sitting in a very comfortable seat, Sean. So we've heard that the factory manufacturing basically shrinking for the fifth month in a row, perhaps better than expected, but still lower. So this is basically month-on-month data, and anything below 50 on this measure represents a contraction. And once again, it's below 50, basically showing that things keep falling. There's headwinds in the manufacturing sector, along with the economic slowdown, of course, that ongoing property crisis, Evergrande, if you remember, Country Garden. The issues continue. So it comes as well as we're seeing the central bank there make move after move to try and encourage spending. We heard last week about every day there was a different update about cutting various mortgage rates, reducing the amount of money that banks need to hold relative to the loans on their books, all about trying to stimulate the economy. And we're seeing ongoing declining demand there, as well as a weak labour market and rising unemployment.
Interesting. Katie, thank you for that update. We will catch you again very soon. Katie Silver in Singapore for us there, back here in the UK. Some interesting comments from the former governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, weighed in on the government's rumoured plans to change those rules. Jane talking earlier about the size of our debt as a proportion of the size of the economy. Jane, let's have a listen to this. Here is Mervyn King speaking to Radio 4's Broadcasting House programme at the weekend, not supporting the idea of changing how the Treasury, so that's Rachel Reeves and her team, actually measures the size and the amount of the UK's debt.
I think the mistake would be to change the definitions of debt and deficits. The ratio of national debt to national income is the right metric by which to judge whether we're on a sustainable path, but to judge it by reference to a forecast 5 years ahead, a rolling five-year horizon, doesn't make any sense. The right thing to do would be to commit to having the ratio of debt to national income falling by the end of this parliament, a fixed date.
Jane, what is this all about? It's going to be a hot topic, and it is a hot topic in the run-up to the budget, but how we measure our debt, why does it matter?
Well, because if you measure it differently, it might appear lower. And it does appear that that is something that Rachel Reeves is at least considering. And, you know, that might give her a little bit of extra spending room. Now, the reason for that is that some other countries measure their debt a little bit differently. So, for instance, several countries in Europe take out their state and energy companies. And it's sort of estimated that if Rachel Reeves were to do that, take out, for instance, the Green Investment Plan, it might mean that the debt looks a little bit lower. And of course, if the debt looks a little bit lower, then you could say that maybe she's got a little bit more room to spend. So this is all about smokes and mirrors to some degree, because obviously, you know, the assets and liabilities in themselves won't change. It's just the way you're measuring them for certain metrics could.
And smokes and mirrors for those investors around the world as well that you've been talking about, Jane. I mean, do they care if all of a sudden, out of thin air, Rachel Reeves has got a bit more to spend than she did before?
Well, you know, I think this is the point, to try and change the metric because you are up against, you know, a pretty nasty number. 100% of GDP is the debt. Doesn't look good. And I think investors would be a little bit dubious. Obviously, the better time to do that, if you're going to change the metric, is to do it when debt is much lower and people aren't paying so much attention. But to do it now, you know, may make some investors a little bit uneasy. And I think this is probably, you know, one of the points that Mervyn King was trying to get across. And it is quite possible that she will do this, but this is all about communication. Mm. And I think the reason that this has all been talked about now is because perhaps she's dipping her toe in the water, seeing how the gilts market, how the markets will react to this. And if investors are okay, maybe she'll do it. But it's certainly if there was a little bit of pushback, maybe she would not. So I think this communication is coming out now for good reason.
So there's a tightrope that Rachel Reeves is walking across, and she's dipping her toe in the water as she goes. These are very, very relevant metaphors for the budget and the decisions the Chancellor has to make. Let us know your thoughts. What do you make of it? These are all decisions, aren't they, being made by those right at the top about how we measure things, how much spending is available, and the impact on investors around the world. Is there too much weight put on that or not? Let me know what you're thinking. It's just after 5:30.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News headlines this morning. Israel has carried out airstrikes on more Hezbollah sites in Lebanon. It's also said to have attacked positions of another group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, killing three people in Beirut. The BBC has discovered McDonald's failed to stop the exploitation of 9 men who'd been trafficked to the UK from the Czech Republic and forced to work in one of its branches. McDonald's say they've taken action to help detect potential risks and are committed to helping every employee spot warning signs. The UK's last coal-fired power station closes at midnight. When it shuts down, the UK will become the first major economy to quit coal. And the American singer, songwriter and actor Kris Kristofferson has died at the age of 88. He wrote Me and Bobby McGee and starred in films including Convoy and A Star Is Born. There are your news headlines this morning. John Wilkinson has the sport.
Manchester United struggled and Tottenham's upturn in form continued last night. Spurs overcame the absence of Son Heung-min to beat United at Old Trafford 3-0. The hosts had had captain Bruno Fernandes sent off at 1-0 down, and it is their joint worst start in the Premier League after 6 games. Aston Villa could have gone joint top of the table, but were held to a 2-2 draw at Ipswich. Rangers won in the Scottish Premiership, beating Hibernian 1-0. Whilst in the Women's Super League, there were wins for Manchester City, Manchester United and Arsenal, whilst Chelsea against Manchester United next weekend has been postponed. It's because of a conflict with the Blues' European schedule. England's cricketers have lost their one-day international series against Australia. The deciding match in Bristol was abandoned because of rain, with the tourists well in charge in their run chase. The final result was a 49-run win under DLS. Ben Duckett had scored a century for England in their 309 all-out. In rugby union, England women have begun the defence of their WXV1 title with a 61-21 win against the USA in Vancouver. Earlier, Bath beat Leicester by 20-15 in rugby union's Premiership. Tadej Pogacar has won the men's road race at the Cycling World Championships, completing the Triple Crown, winning the Giro d'Italia, Tour de France and World Championship in the same year. The United States' Keegan Bradley took the crucial point as his team won golf's President's Cup for the 10th edition in a row, beating the international team in Montreal. And Mark Selby has won snooker's British Open title in Cheltenham, beating John Higgins.
Europe's elite club competition.
The Champions League. Right here on BBC Radio 5 Live, on Tuesday at 8.
Arsenal host PSG.
Right footed, this is saved by Raya, a fantastic goal save!
And on Wednesday at 8.
Aston Villa take on Bayern Munich.
Tielemans waiting, control, driven shot, bottom corner!
And watch highlights of every single match with Match of the Day, Wednesday night on BBC iPlayer.
The Champions League.
On 5 Live.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Wake Up to Money with Sean Farrington.
Good morning. It is Wake Up to Money on BBC 5 Live. Monday, the 30th of September. In 1 month's time, we'll be saying it's the 30th of October, and there is a budget coming up in just a few hours' time. We're 1 month away from all of that. And so we're starting to hear the real consequences. We've already heard it today, the consequences of individuals whose budgets, their own personal household budgets, are tight at the moment, wondering what might be around the corner in a month's time. Businesses wondering where investment is going to be coming from for the infrastructure they need, the encouragement that they want to have to put more investment in themselves, the tax changes that may be on the horizon for that as well. I've had plenty of you getting in touch about it. Joe saying maybe Reeves should introduce a freebie tax. That'd raise a good few quid. The government still having to answer questions on various expenses that it's been putting in over recent times. Members of the opposition having to answer some of those as well. Now, if the government wants to cut pensions, says one, why haven't they cut the gold-plated civil service pensions? Again, not in my backyard, they say. Why do you keep going on about Liz Truss? She was PM for 6 weeks and the markets went back to normal once she resigned. Countries around the world are in much the same position due to the pandemic and a war in Ukraine. So please stop blaming worldwide challenges on 6 weeks of Liz Truss. Keith says, morning, regarding the budget for growth and help to small businesses, the VAT threshold should be raised to 150,000. Material costs push many businesses into VAT. And as we've been hearing, we love a metaphor to try and get our head around exactly what the challenge is, what's the decision making from the Chancellor is really all about. And as Sean in Somerset says, he said, "Morning, Sean. If Reeves is walking a tightrope and dipping her toe in the water, it can't be a very long high tightrope. Perhaps she's still a learner." Where does that metaphor take us this morning? 850-85058. That is the number. We all know the number. 850-58 this morning. Do get in touch. We're going to talk capital gains tax now, because we know that Rachel Reeves has said taxes will be going up in the budget in order to stay within those rules that we've been talking about, that she set herself about the size of the debt as the nation and how that impacts the spending she can do and where money is raised. She's ruled out increases to VAT, income tax, employees, national insurance as well. Capital gains tax, though, still remains one of those options, not so far ruled out. So what are the consequences of it? What actually is it? If you never have to pay it, how does this tax, capital gains tax, impact what we do, the jobs we have, the way businesses work? Mark Heppel is in the studio here with me in Salford, partner at JMW Solicitors, working with a lot of small to medium-sized businesses, particularly on this issue at the moment. Mark, very good morning to you. We will just get you faded up. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, good morning.
Gotcha. We have gotcha. Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark. I mean, first up, maybe what a question you will get from a lot of clients. Can you just explain what capital gains tax is and what it does?
Yeah, so capital gains tax is an optional tax. So it's a tax that's paid when you dispose of an asset. So typically shares or a property or some kind of investment. And it's a one-off tax that's paid on the gain that you receive, basically what you bought that asset for versus what you sell it for. And at the moment, the rate is quite low in comparison to as low as it's been for, I think, since 1988, it's 20%. There's also a thing called business asset disposal relief, which applies to shares in owner-managed businesses where they get a 10% rate on the first £1 million. So it's quite an attractive rate at the moment, which is why it's not been touched for a long time.
So when it's an attractive rate, as you put it, what does that mean people do or businesses do when the rate is historically low?
It's not, I guess, stemmed activity. I think what's actually happening at the moment is the fact that there's been some quite strong rumours that it's going to be changed and potentially changed quite dramatically. It's now causing people to accelerate plans where they thought maybe this wouldn't have changed for a long time. So we've got a lot of time to put our plans and plan our exit strategies from our businesses. And now it's causing a bit of a panic.
I just wonder, given it's the over the period it's been low, like what has been the purpose of it being low? And do you actually see the consequences of it being lower?
Yeah, so I guess it's just to stem activity, because we work with a lot of owner-managed businesses, SMEs, entrepreneurs, and they're, they go into business to have, build something and eventually sell it. And it's attractive for those people to know that once they go through that journey and come to the end of it, they're able to crystallise that gain at a lower rate rather than paying a similar rate to, say, income tax, where would beg the question, why am I taking all this risk of setting up my own business when I might as well be employed by someone else if I'm going to get taxed in the same way?
Do you think it does stem activity?
It does. I think people, buying and selling businesses and gaining investment is very important, because it's a cycle that brings more money into the economy. If people do sell their business, they then will use that money and invest it in other things. When people buy a business, they typically look to grow, so they might take on new employees and invest in property, invest in assets, and general growth. So I think having a buoyant sort of M&A community is quite important for the economy.
So what have you seen then, and what are you seeing over recent weeks, maybe months, when we have this unanswered question, really, of what might happen to capital gains tax in the budget and a lot of chat that it may well be raised?
Yeah, I think it's generated a bit of panic, because I think, as with anything, when there's a lack of certainty around things, people start thinking the worst. And some of the coverage in the media is that capital gains tax could increase by a significant amount. So people are now thinking, well, if I was planning to sell next year, for example, they may be bringing forward their plans and trying to push deals through before the end of October. People who were already in a process and maybe that process was going a bit slower and looking to complete towards the end of the year, that's suddenly accelerated. So it's a bit of a concertina effect that we're seeing where things that we've been working on are being pushed forward and things that might have been planned for further down the line are being brought forward as well. So we've got a lot of people trying to exit their businesses before the end of October to crystallise the capital gains tax at a lower rate.
So who are they selling their business to and what are they then doing?
It's a huge mix. So we typically see people would sell either to, you know, another business, which is known as a trade sale. People might take on what's called a private equity investment, where they might sell part of their business and get some investment into to grow. Other people might be doing what's called a management buyout or an MBO, where they're selling to the next generation within the business, whether that's a management team or in some circumstances their own family.
I just wanted to bring Dharmini in on this chat. Dharmini Sharma, who's our construction boss with us this morning. Dharmini, hearing there what, you know, Mark is laying out, what he's seeing from businesses at the minute and the role of capital gains tax, is it the kind of one, if there was a change, if there was an increase on those tax on the gains on people make from their assets, if they sell them, would that have an impact on the construction industry at all?
I think it would, Sean, because on the exit of many of these portfolios, on the exit of particularly land that has been bought to effectively gain planning permission and perhaps sell on, those are the people and the businesses and the areas of the industry that would be impacted, because right now you can't classify land as a trading asset. So it's very, very difficult for capital gains tax not to apply when you dispose of that asset, but also if you realize that land as a trading asset, you then trigger capital gains tax to apply at that point as well, potentially. So there's so many different nuances and so many different things that we have to think about when we look at this, and it's just another area where actually what's happening is that the government are penalizing those that, like Mark was saying, that are the risk takers, that do want to help deliver growth in the economy, that want to perhaps increase the risk that they take, because this penalizes them and prevents them perhaps from taking that risk and thinking, well, is it worth it? Because if we're going to increase from 20%, the highest rate currently of CGT, to potentially align with income, which is 45%, what's the point? Makes it unfeasible.
Mark, what would your message to the Chancellor be, as you know, as we've heard the cases just even put today about the tightrope she's walking, and you know, and your businesses, you as an employer, will, you know, see the world around you, and you probably have your own sort of views as a business on where investment is needed, infrastructure is needed, spending is needed. So the money's got to come from somewhere if the spending's needed. How do you balance that, and what would you say to the Chancellor about how you balance that?
I think it's not doing something that, I think it's listening to the community is obviously important, and I'm sure the Chancellor has done that and is well researched and well advised. I think one thing that has been worrying that some clients have been speaking to me is if the change is dramatic, i.e. towards the income tax rate, they'd consider becoming non-UK resident and moving their tax affairs overseas, which I think would obviously be a huge shame, because we're talking about, you know, really good entrepreneurs, you know, who are the backbone of this, you know, the business community, you know, people who, you know, work in tech, medcare, alike. So, you know, people are doing really, really good things. And if you start driving those people abroad, it'd be a huge shame. So I think it's having the ear to the ground just to see what these kind of knee-jerk reactions might be, and maybe just tailoring any changes to be, I guess, a bit more moderate to the point that the market might stand it, which I think is, yeah, personally where I think it may end up.
And do you have a almost like a rate in mind that you think wouldn't be scaring people off?
Yeah, well, obviously I've not got a crystal ball, no. And I'm not a tax expert, but I think if it was sort of a single figure rate or something that was staged or stepped up over time, I think the market would stand that, because what you'd probably find is that the expectations of business owners would change a little, and they accept, you know, that, you know, of course we all accept we have to pay, you know, tax, and accepting we have to pay more tax to given what's going on at the moment. But I think that type of rate is something that the market would stand either through, say, seller expectation and maybe buyers being pushed to pay a little bit more or investors having to pay a little bit more.
Interesting stuff. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Direct on the front line of chatting to businesses who are looking at potentially selling up at the moment, maybe a little bit faster than they would have done with mootings of capital gains tax changes at the budget in a month's time. Mark Heppel, partner at JMW Solicitors. Let's cross to our Wales correspondent, business correspondent, Hugh Thomas, who is in Port Talbot for us this morning. Hugh, very good morning to you.
Hi, Sean.
I mean, quite the day. We've discussed this many a time on Wake Up to Money, and there's a few things going on in the energy revolution world today, but this Tata Steel plant in Port Talbot turning off its blast furnace today that makes the steel for the final time. Can you just put into a bit of perspective what this day means for the town and the industry?
I mean, it's, you know, the end of an era, the end of traditional steelmaking in South Wales. It's the way they've done it for decades with these blast furnaces. But for over a century on that site in Port Talbot, they've been creating steel from scratch. And it's that ability to make steel from scratch, which will go today when they switch off Blast Furnace 4 as its official title. I went in there last week, as close as you can get to the fire and flame. It's a real sort of an otherworldly experience. They call it a volcano in a bucket when you're in there, because you can see this kind of, it looks like molten lava, you know, pouring out the sides of it. But it is, you know, it's still the latest technology in turning rock into steel. And that is what will be turned off today. We expect it sort of towards the end of the day, about 5 o'clock, when they take out the last usable liquid iron from this great furnace. And it is, you know, it's a great spectacle of a thing, not just when you're up close, but if you go down the M4 to Swansea, you drive past, you know, the huge site in Port Talbot, about 13 square kilometres altogether. But you will see all the you know, the funnels and the infrastructure of steelmaking there, and an awful lot of that becomes redundant today, as do so many of the workers on site as well. And, you know, Tata throughout this, keen to say all the time, look, we are investing in a new way of making steel. But today, this is a significant moment, not just because it ends that traditional steel making technology, but also signals the start of a big wave of redundancies on that site as well.
And on those redundancies, Hugh, because maybe in a different manner, people will see the two different headlines today, that we're in the UK shutting our last coal-fired power plant, and there's maybe a little less talk around, you know, jobs going there, people expecting this to have happened for, you know, some time now. But with more than 2,000 jobs, could be even more than 3,000 and the rest, if you take the supply chain into account as well, jobs going in the industry around Port Talbot. This was something that has been negotiated right up until the last few weeks. So what are all those people going to do now? Do they feel like there's a package in place to be able to enable them to get another job as well paid as the one they've got at the moment?
I mean, certainly there is a redundancy package. People know what they're getting, and they voted for what they feel is an acceptable redundancy package. And Tata saying it's the best they've ever offered workers in this sort of situation. But the reality is that there isn't a big employer ready to scoop up around 2,000 people who are losing their jobs in Port Talbot alone. But as you say, all the supply chain companies as well. There are people I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks who ended up working at the steelworks because they previously worked at a Ford engine plant in Bridgend, which shut down a few years ago. So the bigger picture isn't of your big sort of engineering jobs, big industrial plants that need workers in South Wales. You know, there's a report says about 1 in 5 people will get a job of a similar scale in terms of the skills they've got and the money they're earning at the moment. inside the steelworks. The deal between the government and Tata was for £500 million to go towards the cost of the new furnace, which hasn't even started being built yet. So that is a project which will employ people in the future.
But when you chat to workers and families here in the area, what if one in five are going to be getting the job that may well pay a similar amount within the works, what kind of things are the four in five doing now? What's life hold for them?
So some of the cohort are people who are retiring, and that's come up a lot. You know, there are a few hundred people in there who are ready to leave, and they've been waiting for this to be signed off so that they can leave. Others will be travelling, basically. We'll be going to places like Hinkley Point down in Somerset. A lot of people who've been leaving the steelworks before the deal was announced were going there because there were some offers of work coming from people to go to Hinkley Point. But otherwise, it's a real mix, and they think that people are going to end up going into the service sector, into hospitality, into other areas, other trades, which they are not skilled steelworkers, but they are not people who've got those sort of opportunities now as they walk out of the steelworks today. So there are bits of the economy which might offer them work, but they definitely won't offer the wages or the lifestyle they've been used to with these well-paid jobs in the steelworks.
And Hugh, just finally, from almost maybe a personal perspective as well, following this story, following this industry and being in the town, the significance of the moment for Port Talbot and for steel in Wales, is that felt?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Port Talbot is a steel town, and you go there and you speak to people and you realise how ingrained it is, not just with the people who are there now, but everybody knows someone, usually is related to somebody who works in the steelworks or has worked there. So it's incredibly sombre whenever go and speak to people, stop them on the street usually, to get their reaction to whatever the latest has been with this story. And always they know somebody who works there. So it's incredibly difficult time, somber time, I think, for people. There isn't really a sense of any kind of celebration about what's happening today, even if there is an acceptance that it has to happen. And it has to be said, Sean, with some people, there is a bit of hope, a bit of optimism, actually, that Tata Steel isn't going. It's not shutting down, that they are staying in the town. They're still milling the steel, and they will be producing it again in a few years' time. But today, yeah, incredibly somber day.
Hugh, thank you. Hugh Thomas, Wales business correspondent there. And continuing the look at the changing world of the jobs market, it can depend kind of very much on the community you're in, the sector you're trained in. We've got an early snapshot of the wider jobs market from Adzuno, which is the online jobs board, this morning. Redundancies up, fewer new roles being created, competition for jobs at its highest level in 3 years, many looking for work. We'll know this already, more than two job seekers for every vacancy. And I've got Yvonne Brown, who's with me, a financial professional from London, who's been looking for work since this summer. Yvonne, morning to you.
Hey, morning, Sean. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us, Yvonne. I mean, it's a completely different sort of sector to the one we were just discussing in Port Talbot and Wales and the steel industry there. But for you, what is it like? What are you sort of trained in? When we say financial professional, what's it like going from whatever you were doing before and looking for work right now?
Absolutely. I'm in investment banking, fund management, and I've been looking for work since, I'd say, the end of June, end of June this year, really fiercely hunting to try and get a breakthrough and secure a position. And it's been incredibly challenging. I'm in the process of having to navigate my way through a sea of applications in order to get somebody to notice and get my credentials seen. It's tiresome.
What is tiresome about the process particularly at the moment?
Well, it's okay. I go through a process of putting my applications together. We're trying to find a job that's appropriate, actually, in the first instance. I'm a mid-career female, and at this point in time, I've been in the industry for over 25 years. So 25 years in finance. There's a huge surge at the moment for early careers. So graduates that have recently come out of university there's a big promotion from the firms in the industry to capture this particular set of the working population. There's also a huge surge to capture those people, and these are predominantly females who are career, they call them career returners. So those that have stepped away from the workforce to raise a family more often than not. So they've taken a career break and they want to get back into the city. Mm. So there's a huge promotion from the firms in the industry to, again, capture this subset of the working population.
Right.
Now, I fall into neither of those. I graduated many, many years ago, many moons ago, and I've taken my career break to raise my family. I am mid-career, so I'm not in the junior sector, and it seems as though I'm in limbo because I'm overqualified for the first section of the people. The second section I don't apply to, so I am trying to have my credentials noticed when I'm not necessarily the people that are
everybody's hunting for in theory. Yes. Well, Yvonne, I mean, thank you for laying out your experience this morning, because I'm sure many will feel like they're in a similar situation. 850-58, do let us know on Wake Up 20 if you are. Big thanks to Yvonne, who's been in touch telling us that. And if you have advice, have tips, it's definitely something we should tap into a little bit more. Best of luck to you, Yvonne. Big thanks to Darmini and Jane, who've been with us as well on Wake Up to Money this morning. That's it from us. Breakfast up next with Rachel and Jeanette. Good morning, both.
Morning. Good morning. Thank you, Sean. Coming up on Five Live Breakfast, we'll bring you the latest on the escalating conflict in the Middle East as Israel attacks Yemen.
And we'll talk about maternity pay after Conservative leadership hopeful Kemi Badenoch says it's gone too far.
And we'll have reaction as Manchester United are thrashed at home by Tottenham. Is that it for Erik ten Hag?
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
More than 50 people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes in Lebanon. The Israeli military has also attacked a Houthi-controlled area of Yemen, hitting power plants and port facilities. Khalil Halou is a military analyst and retired Lebanese army general. He says the strikes have devastated Hezbollah's leadership.
We assume that the persons who died with Hassan Nasrallah in the strike of Israel, all of them are first rank, and the others, if they are still alive, are hiding for the time being.
The BBC has discovered McDonald's failed to stop the exploitation of 9 men who'd been trafficked to the UK from the Czech Republic and forced to work in one of its branches. They were brought to the UK by a criminal gang. The former Prime Minister, Theresa May, leads the Global Commission on Modern Slavery.
The case has raised some shocking questions about the approach being taken by some big companies. They need to look at their supply chains, they need to look at their processes. When people are going in to buy that burger at McDonald's, they want to have confidence that the people working there are not being effectively in slavery through forced labour.
McDonald's says it has taken action to help detect potential risks in future and is committed to helping every employee spot warning signs.
An 8-year-old boy has died after being shot in the head and face at a farm in Cumbria. A man in his 60s has been arrested on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter and released on bail. The incident happened on Saturday afternoon in the village of Warkop.
Kemi Badenoch says she doesn't want to see changes to maternity leave after suggesting hours earlier that it was excessive. In an interview, the Conservative Party leadership candidate appeared to criticise maternity pay, saying the government is doing too much. She's been asked about those comments at the party conference in Birmingham.
I was giving a long answer on business regulations. I've been a Minister for Women and Equalities. I've had 3 children. I've had maternity leave 3 times. I don't need anyone to tell me about maternity pay. I've been one of the people fighting for that. And I won't have my views misrepresented.
The UK will become the first major economy to quit coal later. The country's last coal-fired power station closes at midnight. Ratcliffe-on-Soar in Nottinghamshire has been generating electricity for the last 56 years.
And the American singer.